All right, welcome everybody. We're going to get started. Today is Destination Health in the first hour, and then we'll carry over into the second hour, and we will also do general questions. Calls are starting to come in pretty heavy, but questions are still light. So it's a great opportunity. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic about anything at all, go ahead and press 1 on your phone right now. You've got a really good chance of getting through. In fact, I tell you right now, if you press 1, I guarantee we'll get to you. So if you've got a general question or a health-specific question, go ahead and press 1. We'll get started, and I'll keep you updated on the calls and questions as we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. This is the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, fitness, nutrition, diet, weight loss, training, supplements, you name it. We'll talk about it here on the show. And of course, we wrap it around that trucking lifestyle, living and working on the road, which is always a challenge. But the more we do this, the more we're finding it's really not that difficult to live a healthy life on the road. Requires a little bit of work, a little bit of planning, and some commitment. But there isn't any reason why you can't be very, very healthy on the road, and that's what this show is all about. And because it's Destination Health, my co-host Kim Cockerham is joining me today. Kim, welcome back.
Hi, Kevin. So glad to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Hey, I'm sure you might have a couple things you want to get started on. How about an update on the challenge? How are things going?
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly it. Well, we start this one off, I want to say a little slow, but I mean, because we're going to go forward with this. We are going to keep going. I want to change it up. I was thinking I want to change it up to be talking about more focus, you know, doing a 14-day focus at a time and just keep the ball rolling. So if people have, if they did the 22-day challenge, you know, I want to reflect a little bit and decide what they want to focus on next. It might just be more of the same thing, or it might be shifting up based on, you know, things that they learned about themselves and so forth, you know, these past 3 weeks. Because, boy, they went fast, you know, just like we know they do. They go so fast. And just be intentional. That was my word that came to my mind today is, you know, because I wasn't consistent these 22 days, but the one thing I was aware all the time. And my intentionality is going to be a little bit different going forward with this. So I'm kind of excited to think of, okay, these next 14 days, this is what I'm going to focus on now and just keep rolling.
You know, I think what you said there is a really, it's a really great point. And I think why doing things like this, a challenge, the fact that you're doing it alone keeps you thinking about it. And you said, you know, you weren't as intentional as you wanted to be, but it was always there in your mind. So It was a way for those 22 days to not just forget about it. You may not have had, you know, the best day every day. There were some days you did good, some days you fall off the wagon and forget. But while you're doing it, you don't completely forget. You know, whereas
if it's
just life and life gets in the way and we forget, and pretty soon a month goes by and we haven't done anything. So, you know, maybe what we should do, maybe we should take all 12 months, we should sit down and think of a theme for each month.
Yeah, I like that.
And then that month you're always at least thinking about something. We could even, you know, maybe base it on the foundations, which the foundations in NTP, I'm going to cover that in a little bit because we're going to continue on with our series. And we have our last two foundations today. I think I'm going to combine those because there isn't a ton to talk about. They're both important, just not a lot of detail to talk about. So we'll cover that. And, you know, I like that idea of there's always something that you should be thinking about, because if not, life gets in the way, we forget about it all, and then we're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it goes way too fast. I mean,
it does.
So I love this, that we're working together on it.
It does. So excellent. So one of the other things, and I want to cover this, doesn't have a lot to do with the show today. It was just something that I learned in the last month or so through the NTP course, and I had never thought about this. Lots and lots of people, and there's lots of companies and programs around detox. You know, and it always mm-hmm. sounds good. I've always heard it. I've never done a detox. I look at them and I think, oh, well, you know, maybe I should do that. And I just never got around to doing it. Now I'm glad I didn't, because I learned something really interesting. Our last module in NTP was detox. And it's not a big part of the NTP program, and I'll explain why, but we covered it, and I'm glad we did. The body is a detox machine all on its own. Every function in the body is built around making sure the body stays detoxified. I mean, the liver does an amazing job of that. We have lots of different ways the body gets rid of toxins. The problem is a lot of us are toxic, and so it makes it sound like, well, a detox would be really good. Here's the problem. The body has 7 different pathways to get toxins out. Urination, our digestive tract, those are the 2 big ones. We can sweat. Sweating is a great way of getting toxins out. And there are 7 total, 7 ways that toxins can get out of the body. If all those 7 pathways are clear, then the body will detox itself, and it does a great job of it. So if we're toxic, or if we're building up toxins, it's more than likely because 1 or more or all 7 of those pathways aren't working all that well. We know a lot of people have problem with digestion. We know a lot of people are dehydrated, and during dehydration, you're going to have a hard time eliminating toxins. So what happens, and I want to encourage people not to do a detox program. Don't even think about doing one. Because normally what happens, if you don't know that all 7 pathways are cleared and working properly, and they're probably not, when you go to detox, you might do a protocol that does pull the toxins, because we store a lot of toxins in fat and other tissues, and there are ways to pull it out and get those toxins moving in the body. But if the pathways aren't clear, all you do is move them from one place to another, and they just lodge somewhere else and end up causing problems. So the real key to detox is to make sure the pathways are clear. If we cover all the other foundations, the pathways should be clear and the body should detox on its own. Now, at that point, if we still thought somebody was toxic, you could go ahead and do a detox, is the pathways would be clear. But doing a detox when you're in really bad shape, which is mostly when people do them, is really a bad idea. It could make things worse.
That's scary. And, you know, you mentioned that how it is so big now, because, I mean, I think they feed on the fact that people know that they're just not on the healthy path. So if they buy this program, or they buy this book, or they buy this tea or drink, and do this for so many days, which in essence, we're doing the same thing, like with the focus, but on a healthy way where you just back up and do your foundations and don't take this route. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, normally, you know, I love the idea of the foundations. We're going to talk a little bit more about it today, but the idea being, when you work through this stuff in the right order, a lot of the problems we think we should work on right away, because they're the most obvious, they're the symptoms we're feeling. But many times in the NTP program, we just put those off. That's just a symptom. We want to get down to the root cause and solve all of those, get the foundations really strong, and then see what happens. Because many times by the time we do that, the symptoms go away. We don't have to address those symptoms. We address the foundations, many things will fix themselves. If we address all the foundations and we clear the detox pathways, we may not have to do any kind of a formal detox. The body will do that on its own.
That's really cool. And you know what, I love the word foundations. I loved that they named that those foundations.
Yeah, I do too. And I even love the graphic that they use for it. So the first foundation is the properly prepared, nutrient-dense whole food diet. You always start with that. There's not a single thing that can go wrong if you start with that. The more real whole food you eat, the healthier you're going to be. I tell people if that's the only thing you learn, then don't stress about all the other stuff you've heard. You can't go wrong eating whole real food.
That's simple.
Yeah, it is. That's simple. Start there. I mean, you could. Most people see huge improvements when that happens. And the way the graphic that they show it, that is like the base. That diet is the very, very bottom. And then they put six pillars on top of that base. And those are the other six foundations that we build on. And that's digestion and sugar handling and mineral balance and hydration. And I might be missing one. Music's distracting me. I'll check during the break, and I'll come back and we'll make sure we have all of our foundations in place. So stick around. We're going to come right back. We're going to talk about that. We're going to move on to the two foundations we haven't covered yet. We'll be right back with Kevin Ruff. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health, and we're talking about the foundations in the NDP process. Kim, it's kind of funny. The one I forgot is the one I'm most deficient in.
Yeah.
I was trying to forget that.
I kind of laughed when I saw that.
It's the fatty acids. Mine are getting much better, though, and I'm starting to see some improvement in that area, and it's all because of digestion. So obviously I eat plenty of fatty acids. I eat a really good balance of omega-6 to omega-3 because I do grass-fed and pastured, and I do sardines and salmon, and now I do the cod livers in cod liver oil. Those are all really good sources of omega-3, and I avoid all the omega-6s because I don't do any of the vegetable oils and processed food. That's one of the big keys, is getting that proper 3-to-6 ratio. So far in the series here, we've certainly talked enough about the bottom of the foundation, the diet. Then we covered digestion and elimination. That's where we go next. That's a big one. Blood sugar, we got to get to that one. Fatty acids, and we've covered all of those and a couple other things. And the two foundations we really haven't talked a lot about. Mineral balance and hydration. And I think we can get through these pretty quick and then we can get to some questions. Mineral balance is a really interesting one. And I struggle a little bit with this, but I'm finding some ways to fix this. So one of the most important minerals we have in our body is calcium. And there's a lot of talk about calcium. You know, we know bone health and osteoporosis and all those things. And like most things, we're really just screwing this up and getting it really wrong. I found 14 different forms of calcium supplements. How the hell are you supposed to know which one to take and what works?
Yeah, right.
And then we also know that calcium, if you're taking calcium, you also have to make sure you're not deficient in vitamin D. Those two really work well together. We really shouldn't be deficient in vitamin D anyway, because that is critically important. But here's what we really learned about calcium. Calcium requires seven other things to happen in order for your body to absorb it. Otherwise, you're just wasting your money on supplements anyway, and we should probably work harder to get our calcium from our food and forget the traditional stuff, milk and dairy and all that, unless you're drinking raw milk or eating raw milk cheese or raw milk yogurt. You're probably better off looking for other sources of calcium, and I'll talk about those in a little bit. But seven things have to happen in order for our body to absorb calcium, and the average person is probably missing three or four of these at least. So they're not getting the calcium no matter how much they supplement. So there's an acronym to remember this, and it's the word SHOVED, but there's two H's. It's kind of like shoved.
okay.
So the S is systemic pH. Our body's pH has to be in the right range. Calcium actually plays a big part in that, too. It's really interesting how our body does this. And if I forget, remind me to come back to that. So maybe make a note and remind me.
Yeah,
because
I think there's lots of symptoms, isn't there, that can happen from coughing to other things that tell you where you're at with this. Okay.
Yeah, so the S is systemic pH. The first H is hydration. We have to be very hydrated in order to absorb calcium. The second H is hormones. We have to have all our hormones in balance. That's a bigger thing for women than men. It's a little more complicated for women, but certainly not impossible. The O is other minerals. We have to be sufficient in several other minerals in order to make calcium work properly. The V are vitamins. We can't be deficient in vitamins, and there are some specific ones. The E, fatty acids. And I know E doesn't, but it's essential fatty acids. We use the E to remember essential fatty acids, but it's not just the essential fatty acids. It's all fatty acids. It's just the E worked better than the F in the word. And then D is digestion, which is always key to everything else. So think about the average person. They are more than likely dehydrated. That's the most common nutrient deficiency in the country. It's water. They probably aren't getting all the vitamins they should be getting. I can guarantee they don't have all the minerals they need to have. There's probably some problems with digestion. They may or may not have good systemic pH. If they weren't getting all the vitamins and minerals, they're not producing all their hormones the way they should be. So it's no wonder why people are calcium deficient, no matter how much they supplement. You know, we have to look at, they started telling us about calcium, especially for women and osteoporosis, decades ago. Well, why does the problem keep getting worse? If all you have to do is take some calcium and vitamin D, why would it keep getting worse?
Because we screwed up our bodies so much, nothing's working.
Exactly, right. We have all these other things, and we try to just supplement, and it's not working. So, you know, but if you look at all of those other things that calcium needs in order to work, they're all part of the foundations. If you get the foundations right, you probably won't need to supplement calcium at all. Calcium is pretty abundant in a good diet. All the greens, spinach, kale, chard, all of those have lots of calcium in them. Most nuts and seeds have lots of calcium in them. Sardines are an excellent source of calcium. If you're doing raw dairy, that's an excellent source of calcium. So in a good whole food diet, you're going to get plenty of calcium. You won't need to supplement. But you got to get the foundations right first. So it keeps coming back to the foundations, which include the diet. Get all those things right, and we wouldn't be taking pills and supplements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, when I went to my doctor of Chinese medicine, because I had, that was one that I always thought, you know, you took, you know, and
right.
she, that's one of the ones she knocked out right away.
Cool. That's very
mm-hmm.
good. I'm glad
yep.
she did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. So here's the cool thing about calcium and pH in our blood. Our blood pH has to stay in a really, really tight range, 7.35 to 7.45. That's really close.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wanders outside of those ranges, you'll start to get symptoms and problems. Our body, though, is really, really good at keeping it there if we have all the things working right. Calcium, your bones are almost all calcium. And calcium is alkaline. So calcium, it counteracts acid. And what your body does is if it notices that your blood has become too acidic, it pulls calcium out of your bones and puts it into your bloodstream. And that calcium
mm-hmm.
counteracts the acid and brings the alkaline content back up into the right pH range. If you get too alkaline, your body takes the calcium out of your blood and puts it back into your bones. What a great system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have this endless storage just about of calcium in your body, and your body will pull that calcium in and out of the bones as it needs it to keep blood pH right. Over time, though, if you've got a poor diet and you haven't addressed all the foundations and you're calcium deficient in your diet, then every time your body needs to pull calcium out of your bones, you're going to have less and less, and that's when your bones start to get brittle. Makes
mm-hmm.
total sense.
Yep.
So that's the calcium thing. There are lots of other minerals that we need. Three that we want to keep in balance that we've talked about quite a bit. Sodium, potassium, and magnesium. Those three work together to perform a lot of functions. One of them is muscle function. They make muscles contract and they make muscles relax. And as long as you've got a good balance, all of your muscles will contract and relax when they're supposed to, including your heart, because it's a muscle. So anytime you're out of whack on these three, you're putting more of a strain on your heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that we're getting good mineral balance, and almost everybody is deficient. And the thing about this is you have to stay on top of it. I've been really watching my mineral balance, and I'm going to talk about how you test this in a couple minutes. But I know when I get out of balance on those three, I get leg cramps. And that's
mm-hmm.
a really common symptom of being out of whack on those three, the sodium, potassium, and magnesium, are leg cramps. One of the tests we do in the functional evaluation is we put a blood pressure cuff on somebody's calf, and we start pumping up the pressure, and you can induce a full-blown calf cramp by doing that. It's amazing how fast you can do it, too. The idea is if you can get that blood pressure cuff up over 200 pounds of pressure and somebody isn't getting a cramp, they're probably not mineral deficient. We had people cramping at 140 when we were testing this. So there's the music again. I'm going to get to a break. We're going to come back, wrap this up, and get to some of your calls and questions. So stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Russ. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim Cockerham is here with me. We're continuing on with our NTP series on the foundations, and we're covering mineral balance and hydration. We're going to get to your calls here in a little bit. So there's another really cool way to test for mineral deficiencies. The test that I just talked about with the blood pressure cuff on the calf is a good one. That would probably tell us magnesium, potassium, sodium. There are other minerals we need. There's a very cool kit you can buy. You can get it on Amazon. And if you go to Amazon and you just type in mineral taste test, you'll come up with a couple kits there. There are some smaller, some are bigger. And the cool thing about minerals is our body will tell us whether we need them or not by taste. So they put minerals in a water solution. So it's water, but it's got the mineral in it. And you just take a capful or a teaspoon and swish it around in your mouth. So you might take a potassium or zinc or whatever it is. And you swish it around in your mouth and you see how it tastes. If it doesn't taste at all or it tastes sweet, then your body is crying out for more of that mineral, especially if it tastes sweet, because that's your body. We like sweet. We eat sweet. I mean, we are programmed to eat sweet because for the most part, it's really rare in nature. That's what's gotten us into so much trouble with all of our modern diet is because we crave sweet naturally. And in nature, it's very rare, and that's why we seek it out. But if we're really deficient in a mineral, our body will taste sweet, so we want more of it, and we'll eat more of it. It's amazing how our bodies work. If it's neutral, you just don't taste anything, you're still pretty deficient. The stronger it tastes, and when I say stronger, it usually means more unpleasant. The more unpleasant it tastes or feels in your mouth, the less deficient you are. If you have a good supply of that mineral in your body, it will taste horrible the second you put it in your mouth. That's pretty rare. I do a lot of testing on this with myself and other people, and you don't find that very often, which tells us that we're all mineral deficient. And the reason we're mineral deficient is where we should have been getting our minerals has to start from the plants, but actually it has to start in the soil. That's where all minerals come from, is the soil. So we could get them from plants that have been raised in good, healthy soil, or we could get them from animals who eat plants that are raised in good, healthy soil. But if we look at most of our farming, we don't have healthy soil. We use artificial fertilizers instead, and that's also the same stuff we tend to feed to our animals, and then we end up mineral deficient no matter how many of these foods we eat. So this is where you've got to really seek out the higher quality foods, organic vegetables, pastured and grass-fed meats, and a lot of seafood. If you can handle any kind of seafood, it's loaded with some of the minerals that are hard to get. So that's kind of the big picture on mineral balance. What do you think?
It's one of those things that I like how you simplify it, because it's one of the things that kind of overwhelms me, you know, I like two things that you can keep on top of it and test it pretty easily. And the fact you're testing it by listening to your body, like the light balance that we use for the electrolytes and so forth. That to me is pretty cool and very basic, but I need to dive into it actually, to tell you the truth, and learn my way through it. I think that's the only way, is by action will I get it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And again, I just went through this, so it's really fresh in my mind, and I've been experimenting with it, doing the taste test, and it really is interesting. When I was putting the light balance, one capful of the light balance, which for the people who don't know, the light balance is a liquid like a water almost, but it's got the minerals in it. It's got sodium, potassium, and magnesium, the three I just talked about. And when I was putting a capful in my Bulletproof coffee every morning, which is a great way for me to do it because I remember. I drink coffee every morning, remember to put it in. When I first started doing it, I was using salted butter, and I would put a capful in and didn't even notice any difference. And then I put two capfuls in and noticed a little bit of saltiness. And then after a couple of days, I noticed two caps was like kind of disgusting. Like I couldn't even drink it.
Uh-huh.
So I went back to one, and then that got a little not so great tasting. So I switched to unsalted butter. And then after about a week of that, I really didn't like the taste of the light balance in my coffee anymore. So I stopped putting it in. A couple weeks go by, I see it in the cabinet, and I decide to try a little bit, and guess what? It hardly tastes anymore. So you've got to stay on top of this. Obviously, in my diet right now, I'm not getting enough of those minerals, so I have to take a step back and either look at my diet, or this is one of those supplements I don't mind taking. I mean, if I'm having that hard of getting it in my diet, and I seem to be, I'm fine. This is a very absorbable form of these minerals, and it works because you do it for a while. You realize, you know, you don't even like the taste of this stuff anymore. That means it's there in our body. Then maybe I need to go to doing it every other day or, you know, whatever works. And you could do that with all of the minerals in the taste test. The cool thing is when you put the mineral in your mouth to taste it, you just swallow it and you're getting some of the mineral. So it works great. So the last one is hydration. There isn't much to say about this. Drink lots of water. I don't know what else to say. And I'm not as good at this as I should be. I'm getting in the habit of keeping a full water bottle, and I really like lime in my water, which is good too. I'm just getting into the habit of having one with me all day long and sipping on it all day long. And when I run out, refill it. And it's just one of those habits we have to develop, and it is very, very easy to be underhydrated.
And you, well, you gave the formula for that too last week, which I thought was really cool because you added the, you know, if you have coffee or if you have any of the other diuretics to affect our hydration.
Yeah, so. Those are the foundations. Get those right. Get all of those things right, and the odds are you're not going to have to work much on anything else. There may be some things we have to really target and supplement. A lot of people have some adrenal issues that will hang out, some thyroid issues. But if we've covered all the foundations and worked through all of that and those are still there, then they're usually pretty easy to target. If you try to target those before you get the foundations done, it's just not going to work. You're going to chase things. You're going to try things. It's not going to work because one of the foundations is going to be off.
Okay. Got it. That's a good thing to focus
on. All right. So what do you say we get to some phone calls?
Yeah, there's some great questions out here.
All right. Let's do that. Let's start off in Colorado. James, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim.
Hi there.
Hey there.
I know. Yeah, I had a small testimonial about the ketogenic diet. I've been on it pretty much since you've been suggesting it for about 6 months, and I've been really solid on it for about two. But before that, you know, as a younger kid and everything, I ate fast food and sodas and everything else, and I wasn't feeling bad, you know, by eating that stuff when I was doing it, but I, you know, of course I never felt all that great. So the, a couple weeks ago, I went on vacation, went to another state, and I found myself in a hotel with no transportation. Well, the only thing nearby me in the morning was a McDonald's and a vending machine. That's all I had for food. Right.
Oh boy.
So I go into McDonald's. I get two sausage and egg McMuffins with no cheese, two hash browns, a large orange juice, and I drank one bottle of soda from that vending machine, right? Now, I was fully expecting to be ill all day from that.
Right.
Well, I didn't.
Right.
I felt okay. I felt all right.
Right.
Right. The very next day, I had a headache, like a hangover I have never had in my life. Like I've been drinking the entire night, and I could not shake that headache all day. The first time I had taken aspirin in like a year was that day. That I had a splitting headache because of that. From one soda and a breakfast at McDonald's. You know,
right.
When you're on a ketogenic diet, you cannot go back to fast food. You're in a hammer of bad problems.
Yeah. Hey, there's the music. I'm going to come back to you right after the break. You know, some people hear that and say, oh, my God, I'm not going to go on a ketogenic diet or a good whole food diet because if I go off of it, I'm going to feel terrible. But instead, they feel terrible all the time. They just get used to it. All right, we'll be right back. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment of the first hour. At the end, I'll say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. Don't hang up because we're going to come back into another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim Cockerham is here with me, and we're taking your calls and answering your questions. We were talking with James in Colorado. James, go ahead.
Yeah. Just like we were saying, though, I would absolutely never go back to eating fast food and everything. The problem is not the ketogenic diet. It was the food I was eating. You know, I have no desire to go back to eating that stuff at all. It's just that I put myself in a situation where I didn't prepare myself, and that's the reason why it happened, you know.
Yeah.
So it had nothing to do with my diet. It had to do with the situation I put myself in. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've done it. I you know, fail to plan ahead, end up somewhere where you don't have a lot of control over food. You know, the good thing most of the time for me, if it's going to be a half a day or, three quarters of a day or whatever, I just won't eat because I don't need to. I'm not all that hungry anyway. At some point you got to eat, and if that's the only food available, I'll tell you, when the last week or so before the CMC, we were eating out a lot just because of our schedule. We were working so late, and then we would have to go eat out, and it wasn't horrible quality food. It wasn't fast food, but it was still restaurant. And I noticed after about 10 days of that, I started to get achy joints again. And I hadn't felt that in a very long time.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, I have a question about two things you suggest to eat, but I don't know why we're eating them. One is apple cider vinegar, and the other one is cacao. What is the benefits of those two things?
Got it. So apple cider vinegar, raw, unfiltered. Let's talk about that. Don't go in and buy the Heinz.
Unfiltered. Okay. Okay.
Raw,
unfiltered.
Raw, unfiltered.
Okay.
Correct.
When
you look at the bottle and kind of turn it upside down and shake it, you're going to see this funky web-like stuff in there. That's actually called the mother. That's kind of the live bacteria enzymes that make it what it is. So
yeah, I see that on the label. Yeah, mother. Yeah.
It's called the mother. And that's what we're after. That is loaded with enzymes that are really good. Our body uses a lot of enzymes for processes, uses them as cofactors. You know, I talked about calcium absorption needing cofactors, and this is where we get those things from, raw, live food. Apple cider vinegar also can aid in digestion. So if you're having heartburn, try taking some apple cider vinegar before you eat. That will aid in digestion. And again, it's just got some enzymes and some nutrients that aren't present in a lot of other foods. So it's great for making salad dressings. I'll take an avocado, mash up an avocado and sprinkle a little bit of raw apple cider vinegar on it. Makes a nice combination and some salt.
Well, I'll sip it from the bottle. Does it actually raise your digestive acids, though?
It doesn't.
It doesn't? Okay.
No.
I thought that was one of the benefit effects to it.
Well, this is kind of confusing because if we check the pH of apple cider vinegar itself, I think it's around 5, if I remember right, which is clearly acidic because 7 is neutral. The lower the number, the more acidic. But our stomach pH is 1.2, if it's right. If we're healthy, our stomach pH should be 1.2. It's like it will take chrome off a bumper. So it's not the acidity of the apple cider vinegar making our stomach acid stronger, but for some reason it stimulates the stomach to produce more stomach acid. So
in
essence, it is making the stomach more acidic, but not because of the acidity in the apple cider vinegar, because it's not all that strong. But something about it, and sipping it from the bottle is excellent. I mean, that if you can handle that, a lot of people can't. But if you can handle that, that'll really stimulate the stomach to start producing the hydrochloric acid and the digestive enzymes.
Okay. Cacao?
The cacao. Raw, again. Raw cacao. Not processed, And it is loaded with minerals. This is a good source of the minerals we're talking about. It's loaded with antioxidants, tons of them. So antioxidants are those things that run around in our body and soak up all the free radicals that we don't want because the free radicals are doing damage. And antioxidants are like preservatives. If you take vitamin E is a really strong antioxidant. If you take vitamin E and put it in, like, olive oil, it will stop that olive oil from going rancid. It's a preservative or an antioxidant. Yeah. So vitamin C is a really strong antioxidant. Vitamin E is a really strong antioxidant. And then there are things like phytonutrients and a bunch of little compounds, and raw cacao is loaded with those. Coffee is, too. Coffee's a fairly good source of antioxidant, but cacao is even
how
better.
I take it, how I take it, because it's very strong. That's one thing I just can't take all by itself. Is I'll mix it in with the coconut oil that I take, and I put like sea salt with it and everything, and that's the way I can stomach it. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You can make your own chocolate bars that way. I do it. You take coconut oil, melt it on very low heat, stir in the raw cacao, put in a little bit of sweetener if you want, maybe a little honey, maybe a little stevia or erythritol, and then put it with the coconut oil. You can't leave it at room temperature. You have to cure it. Like I throw it in the freezer, and then it'll harden up.
Does room temperature damage the coconut oil as far as its minerals and all that? Because it'll get so hot in the truck, it'll go into liquid form.
Right.
No?
No, that's the when a fat is solid at, let's say, 70 degrees, which is kind of what we consider room temperature. If a fat is solid at room temperature, that means it's saturated, and that also means it's very, very stable. Those are the fats we want to cook with. Because even the heat of cooking won't damage those fats.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I refrigerated my olive oil, too. Since you made some statement about not using it as a coconut. I refrigerated it before I drank it and all that. So, yeah.
Good.
Okay.
That sounds like you're on the right track.
Yeah. I gave you a blood draw that you were kind of impressed with. So I think I'm going on the right track here. So,
excellent. Not only are you doing all the right stuff, we have numbers to prove it. I love that. Let's go to North Dakota. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. My question is, acne, zit, and hairs, etc., are those caused just by having dirty skin and then your body trying to get it out, or is it a dietary issue?
Purely dietary. Purely dietary, because if you look at, again, if we go back to traditional civilizations, you didn't see acne. It didn't exist. And they didn't wash. They didn't have, you know, face scrubs and acne medication and all this other stuff. And yet they never had these problems. They were clearly more dirty than we are. In fact, it some of this is the opposite. We strip with all of our soap and chemicals and cleansers and oils and all the other stuff we put on our body and our hair. And we strip all the natural stuff, including all the good bacteria, off of our body. And then we try to replace it with something artificial. And that's a lousy idea. One of the books I read, and I really recommend it, is called Live Dirty, Eat Clean. And it's really the idea that we over-cleanse. We shower too often. We use too many soaps and lotions and cleaners. And our body and our skin is a wreck. So we know we've talked a lot about good gut bacteria. The next biggest source of bacteria on our body is our skin. We want good, healthy bacteria living on our skin. But yet, just like we strip our gut of good bacteria, we strip our skin every single day of good bacteria. Honestly, I know it freaks people out, but we should not be showering nearly as often as we do. And when we do shower, we shouldn't be scrubbing our body with harsh chemicals and then putting more chemicals on top of it. So part of it is lifestyle. But it's not being too dirty. It's actually being too clean. But the biggest part of it is diet. And there are two factors that will cause the things you're talking about. One is a weak immune system, and our immune system's all in our gut, so we got to get that gut healthy again. And the other one is fatty acid balance. Both of those two will immune system being the big one, but fatty acid balance will also lead to skin issues. So what we've got to get back to, we've got to get our digestive tract healthy. We've got to get it repopulated with good bacteria, get our fatty acids in balance, and not worry about being so stinking clean all the time. Kim, any last words? I can't believe the music is playing already.
I know. No, just everybody join us for these next 14 days if you're not already on our text list. Text LT Health to 99,000.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Destination Health. So this is Kim Cochran. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Be safe. Be profitable. Fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. And master the journey. Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, we're going to do a second hour, so hang tight here. Looks like we're doing pretty good on questions, although I would say that if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything, you press 1 on your phone right now, there's a pretty good chance we might be able to get to you in the next hour. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. This is a continuation of Destination Health, so I have my co-host with me, Kim Cockerham. Kim, welcome back.
Hi, glad to be back, Kevin.
You know, this Destination Health thing just keeps growing and growing. We have so many topics to talk about. And you know, if somebody's new to the show, this is the part of the week where you and I get together and we talk about everything health, whether it's nutrition, diet, fitness, training, exercise, disease, supplements, drugs, whatever it might be. And we really make sure the information we're talking about is able to be done on the road. We always keep in mind that our listeners are living and working in a truck. They're away from home. They don't have access to some of the things that you have when you live in a house and you can go to the store whenever you want. So we know that that's what's going on, and that's what this show is all about. But isn't it fun and amazing, the more we do this, the more we see that it's just not that hard to do on the road?
Yeah, and you know what? And our listeners and all of our health tribe and that are proving that, because they are finding a way, and then they bring it back and share how they're doing it, which is just the best.
It is. I love how creative some people get and some of the ideas they come up with. So the more we do this and the more we share and the more the listeners figure things out on their own and share it, we're really finding it's really just not that difficult. I've been on the road myself, all of March, all of April, all of May, and most of almost 4 months now.
Yeah, crazy.
And it's a little bit of a challenge. I mean, it's certainly easier for me when I'm at home and when my schedule isn't so crazy. But once you commit to this, you find a way. It might not be perfect all the time, but if you stay committed, and you and I talked last time about the challenge and how just being a part of the challenge keeps it in the back of your mind. So even when you aren't perfect, you're thinking about it, and you don't just let everything slide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been great. It's been great.
Yeah, so it's getting so popular that most weeks now we do 2 hours of Destination Health, which I'd love. There's so much more we could talk about, so much more we could do. And I love hearing the success stories. I was working with somebody this week, somebody I know here in Ohio, and she's coming up on 50, and really, really knows she needs help with her health. Not really overweight. It could stand to lose a few pounds, but really has a lot of health issues and wants to work on those. And she brought over all her medical records, and we sat down, and I went through them, and I was absolutely shocked. If I remember right, 7 different prescriptions, and 4 or 5 supplements. And I told her, throw away all the supplements. Just stop taking those immediately. Here's the thing that really, really scared me. The first thing I see that she's on is Lipitor, a statin.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so how bad's your cholesterol? And she said, well, I don't know, but I've got a blood test somewhere. Let me find it. So she pulls it out. Her total cholesterol. Now, this is before. This is the blood test she took before they put her on Lipitor, like a year ago. Total cholesterol, 146.
Oh, my gosh.
146, and they put her on Lipitor. I almost came unglued. So we know that women, and women over 40 especially, when you study the numbers, the higher their cholesterol is, the longer they live. There is no reason to lower cholesterol in a woman over 40 or a man over 40. No reason to lower cholesterol. All the research shows the higher your cholesterol after that age, the more protective it becomes and the longer you live. But at 146, and then I checked the rest of her numbers, everything was right in the middle of the normal range. Triglycerides, HDL, LDL, the ratios were all good. If anything, I would want her cholesterol up, not down.
Mm-hmm,
put her on a statin and never mentioned anything about supplementing with CoQ10.
That's insane. I'm floored that they put her on Lipitor.
Yeah. Yeah. And never bothered to say, oh, by the way, your body's not going to produce CoQ10 anymore, which is really important for your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to supplement with it if you're going to be on a statin. No supplement of CoQ10.
No
That's reason
bad.
To be on a statin. I thought it had to be a mistake. I mean, I'm almost speechless when I saw it. There was a statin. There was, she's on metformin for diabetes and insulin, a high blood pressure medication. I'm not going to remember them all. There were so many. Well, then those medications caused some problems, and she developed pancreatitis, which is a really horribly painful condition. and there, we don't know a lot about it. We don't know how to cure it. It comes and goes, and you get bouts and episodes and causes all kinds of pain. So because of the pancreatitis and the pain, they put her on an opioid. And then because the opioid made her nauseous, they put her on an anti-nausea.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a never-ending.
Mm-hmm.
She's like a giant chemical experiment, you know. It's so I immediately said, stop the supplements. Just stop those completely. They're not doing anything. They're not targeted. So just stop those. Stop the statin immediately. Do not take another one. Tell your doctor if you want. Don't tell him. I don't care. Just stop taking them, because that's insane to be on a statin. And she was getting muscle pain, which is common. The metformin and the insulin, because she's going to start on a ketogenic diet, a really strict ketogenic diet. She is going to work with her doctor to make sure we taper off of those, because I think those, the need for those is going to go down pretty quick. I said, leave the high blood pressure medication there for now. It's not a big deal. They don't cause a lot of side effects. And I have a feeling within 30 days, she'll be able to come off of that and the blood pressure will normalize. It is really sad that the doctors explain nothing. They do what they do. They prescribe a drug. They don't really explain a lot to people about what it's for, what it does, what else they should be doing. And her health just continues to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is she's really, really committed. And I really think she's going to follow through. She just didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. How did she feel afterwards? There had to be a sense of empowerment and
there was.
Take back her life. Mm-hmm.
She was so excited to get out of here because she was going straight to the grocery store with the list.
Mm-hmm.
We logged into Thrive Market, and I helped her figure out what kind of things she could order from Thrive Market. And she was going to go home, throw everything out of the pantry, and, you know, start all over with real food.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It'll be great to hear how she's doing in the next month or so.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you say we get to some phone calls?
That sounds great.
Let's go to Indiana. Dustin, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Kevin. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, great to have you here.
Something a little quick on this. I'm a company driver. I work 4 days a week. I haul a fuel tanker. But for the first time in my life, I'm sorry, excuse that. For the first time in 16 years, I am now under 300 pounds since I've started this in February as far as the ketogenic diet goes.
Wow, congratulations.
I've dropped 40 pounds since February 21st. I feel great. Because I think of cutting all the grains out, I have not had a migraine since I've started. I've struggled with those for years.
That's amazing.
I also had – yes, it is. I could not believe it. I mean, I have missed probably – 12 days of work in the past year because I can't get out of bed because my migraines are so bad.
Mm. Wow.
And I haven't had a headache, and I don't know what to do with myself anymore.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I've got a few of my family members started on this. My sister-in-law is down 30 pounds. Got a couple people at work that are starting this. They're just seeing, what are you doing? It's so easy. So, I do hear the music. I do hear the music.
Hold.
I do want to let Ken. Okay, we can hold. Sure.
Hold that thought. And congratulations for sharing what you're learning. You're seeing the results. It's working for you. You're sharing it with other people. That is wonderful. We will be right back after this break. Stick around. We've got lots more coming. Kevin Rutherford.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health. And before the break, we were talking with Dustin in Indiana. Dustin, go ahead.
Okay, and then also, like a little testimonial on the 22-day challenge that we just finished up on. 12 days into that, I have quit drinking my diet soda, which I have always lived on for so long. I'm 10 days free of that. I've been doing iced tea and water for the most part. And I never, ever thought I'd be able to give that up. And I actually had a sip of it yesterday because I was on a short trip out from home and we were talking to some friends and I was out on my water. I had a sip of my wife's Diet Mountain Dew and it did not taste good anymore.
Oh, good. Good.
So
that
great.
Makes it easier.
Yeah, it really does. I really enjoy what I'm eating. The different recipes that have been shared on the Destination Health web or Facebook page, I really enjoy those a lot. I actually put one on there about the stuffed bacon bowl burgers the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
those looked pretty awesome.
Yep. In July last year, I had had a physical done through my doctor. Next month, in July of this year, I'm going to have another one. I'm going to compare, get my all my blood work done, and we'll see how everything is doing. I've never been on any blood pressure medication. I've never been on any cholesterol medication.
Good.
So most of the time, I've been pretty decent. Other than, you know, I was 330 pounds when I started this, and this morning when I stepped on the scale, I was 290. So,
wow.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. So cool. And I love the fact that the migraines have disappeared. That had to be horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I've had hangovers before back in my wild days that weren't near as bad as those migraines.
Yeah, I've never experienced one, but from what I understand, it is horrendous.
Yeah, it's and I didn't think about it until about 3 or 4 weeks in. I'm like, man, I haven't had a headache. And then, you know, listening to you for so long talk about how grains can be really destructive to your body when you eat them in a good amount, you know, I support that 100%. And like you said, I think last week, I don't ever see myself have a need to eat grains again.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, here's the thing, that what we learned about grains, they really have zero nutrition. And they cause all kinds of problems. So it really is one of the first things we should eliminate. And it's not unusual to hear stories like yours where people have horrendous symptoms of some sort that nobody has ever thought that it had anything to do with what we ate. And yet you eliminate kind of one class of foods and they're just gone.
Right. And also something else that has happened, for the last couple of years, I had horrible chest pains to the point where I'm in the ER, and I'm thinking I'm having a heart attack. Well, they just say, well, it's inflammation of maybe the cartilage in your sternum or something else. And now, since I've started the ketogenic diet, I've had none whatsoever. I don't know exactly. I don't know if that's because of the grains or whatever, too. But I used to live with it every day where it would be just a small ache. And then other times, man, I thought I was – you know, going to die. And that is completely gone also.
Yeah, it's probably a combination. The grains were certainly contributing to that. The standard American diet is very inflammatory in a lot of ways, and all pain is inflammation. So your migraines are inflammation. Your chest pain was inflammation. Our achy joints, inflammation. Heart disease is all inflammation. And our diet is very, very inflammatory. A ketogenic diet, even if you don't go to real high-quality food, is anti-inflammatory. If you go to a ketogenic paleo-style diet, it's completely anti-inflammatory. And most of our aches and pains and that kind of stuff just go away. Don't you love stories like that, Kim?
Oh my gosh, Kevin, I do. And I thank you, Dustin, for calling in about that. There's a couple things that he said that just really stood out to me. And with so many people share here, And I'm just so glad he did the 22-day challenge, because what I think you find with that too is, you know, like he halfway through that, he gave up his diet pop. And I think that's what it is when we move forward with these things. You set these tiny goals, and when you get there, you see a little bit more you want to do, and you take it and take a little farther, just like our goals in general. You get there and you can see further, and that's what this whole journey does. So that's when people are on the fence, like a lot of times people focus on what they have to give up. Look, all this stuff you gain, you know, you're giving up, if you're giving up grains, that's not a bad thing, you know, but sometimes they hang on to it, but it's like, just trust us, you know, start here and see where it takes you. And then you decide where, you know, what you want to do next. And the other thing he said, which is really cool, you know, like he brought his family on board, and that's what we're finding, you know, because there's so many people that need this. And instantly when you start feeling good, you start thinking of other people like, man, you know, you want to help and you want to help. And I know some people get discouraged because family and friends might not be listening, or they tell them they're, you know, it's a bunch of bunk. But I just encourage people to do like Dustin and some of the other people are doing, is just keep living this lifestyle. And people notice, they see you feeling better and looking better, and they want it. They want to be a part of it.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. Being here in Ohio just this past weekend, my whole family's still here, and I don't see them a lot because I've been traveling my whole life virtually. And I'm the youngest of seven. So all seven of us were together over the weekend. And it was kind of funny because it was the typical party, talking about stuff and catching up on life. And in the middle of it, and there's a lot of people who were all outside the coach, and it was a beautiful day, and it's, you know, loud, and we're talking, and in the middle of it, one of my brothers said, hey, what's with this health thing you're doing? And, you know, you look great. And, you know, I know you just finished your finals. And so, you know me, once you ask the question. So I started, and there's so much. And then the next thing I know, a couple more people walked over, and then somebody said, hey, it's kind of noisy. I can't hear everything. Let's go in the coach. So like four of us went in the coach, and then somebody else would walk in. Pretty soon you couldn't even move in the coach. And we were doing, you know, bulletproof coffee samples, and it was really fun because they are wide open to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they, when I said I've given up all grains and I did it over a year and a half ago, and they said, like what? And I said, well, no wheat, no rice, no corn, no oats. And they said, well, like wheat, like bread? I said, oh, yeah, I wouldn't go anywhere near bread. Pasta, forget it. They're like, you gave up pasta? You don't eat pasta? I'm like, no, never. Wouldn't even think about eating it again. They were just blown away that I would even consider giving up all of that stuff. But then they were intrigued. And, and you know, they could see the results. So, you know, I think several of them are going to try it. So it's
that's great.
It was fun. So let's go to New York. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Hey, Dave.
Hey there.
Well, it's been a long time. Hey, listen, I just want to say the hair standing up on my arms when you guys are talking to somebody that's having great results. I mean, you're absolutely changing lives. There's no doubt about it. I'll get to my question.
Sure, go ahead.
I've been hearing about raw honey, that it's probably good to take a tablespoon or so before bed at night to get your liver to doing what it's supposed to do and to keep you sleeping through the night. Have you heard anything about something like that? And how bad is that on a ketogenic diet?
Okay, very good question and a very good point, and it is something I do virtually every night. Now, it doesn't have to be raw honey. Raw honey, what we're looking for late at night, if even though we're on a very low carbohydrate diet, if we can work it out, we would like to take in most of our carbohydrates late in the day. So for me, obviously in the morning, you know, first 5 or 6 hours I'm awake, it's nothing but bulletproof coffee, so there's no carbohydrates in that at all. My lunch will be obviously heavy on fat, a little bit of protein, and I usually eat a lot of vegetables. So I'm getting a kind of a good shot of carbs then, but not a ton. And that allows me later in the day, I still have plenty of carbs I'm allowed to take in. You know, I can stay at about 50 grams and stay ketogenic. So, you know, even a tablespoon of honey isn't a tremendous amount of carbohydrates. It's not that bad. A teaspoon is hardly any at all. So whatever room you have left for carbohydrates that day, raw honey is a good source of carbohydrates. It's even better if you buy it local because when it's local to where you live, you are then getting like almost like antibodies to the pollens and all the other things that can irritate you that are in your area. So when the bees feed on those pollens and then make honey from it, that's actually like a little immunization. So if it's local raw honey, that's even better. Now, when I'm going to get to a break, we come back, we'll talk about why we kind of load those carbohydrates to the end of the day. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim Cockerham is with me. This is Destination Health, and we're going to go back to Dave in New York. So what we're looking for at the end of the day, Dave, isn't necessarily the raw honey. We're looking for more carbohydrates to bring our blood sugar up a little bit before we go to bed, and then our liver has some things to do, and it helps keep our blood sugar steady all night. You know, it's really common to find people who wake up at 2 to 3 in the morning and have a hard time falling back asleep, and it's usually low blood sugar that wakes you up.
Yeah, that's what I understood. This article I read said something about that the raw local honey, like you say, is the perfect balance between fructose or sucrose or something. There was two of them, but it was supposed to be the perfect balance. I don't know which coast it was, but it's supposed to be the perfect balance.
and part of what's going on with the raw honey, like I said, it's actually kind of an immunization to local things that you might be allergic to. It's got lots of minerals. It's a very, very natural sweetener. It has properties we don't even understand. It's very antiseptic. So if you're going to get something sweet, honey is a good way to do it. But on the other hand, if you – and I will do like a teaspoon or two of raw honey in tea before I go to bed. I might make a couple of raw cocoa, some coconut milk, some raw chocolate, and a little bit of honey. Or some nights I'll do a handful of raspberries with a little bit of whipped cream, and I might even drizzle a little bit of honey on that depending on how much room I have for carbs left that day. It might be – another good way of doing this is to make sure that when you're doing the sweet late at night, you also get a little bit of fat or a little bit of protein with it. So and that stabilizes things overnight. So you might do something like a half of a green apple and some almond butter. That way you're getting the carbohydrates, the fat, and the protein, and that'll stabilize you even more overnight.
I like the idea of the raw cacao with the honey. I like that idea. That is a good way to get the more raw cacao in me. But sounds good. Well, I'm gonna go for it. And I was just kind of concerned about, you know, I try to keep my sugar to almost nothing, you know.
Yeah,
and
that's good.
I throw that in at night, you know. I was just wondering what I was gonna do to try to stay in ketosis, you know.
Just work it into your total carb count. You know, when you know the number of carbs that works for you, just
I got it.
All day long so that you've got room for those carbs late at night. And then just make sure they're, you know, don't eat pure white sugar. You know, honey, berries.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, those kind of things. Perfect.
I got you. Well, great. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate the your time you take to help us out.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
all right. Let's go to Illinois. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim.
Hi there.
Hey there.
Yeah, I had a question. I'm not really sure what it is exactly. I honestly haven't researched it myself, and I probably should have done that before I. But anyway, since you're available, I'm going to ask.
Okay.
I have this issue with my shoulder occasionally. I'll be driving, you know, and I'd usually rest my right arm on the armrest, and I'll reach up to grab the shifter, adjust the radio or something, and I'll get like a sharp pain right in that joint, and seems like I can kind of wiggle my arm around a little bit, and then it kind of goes away. And most of the time, like if I'm standing or working, it's never a problem. But I'm wondering if that is like maybe a rotator cuff going bad, or I'm not exactly sure what that would be. And also what maybe this I've been kind of, I'll say I'm playing around with your ketogenic diet. I was able to give up pop, which I thought would be really hard. And it was actually fairly easy. I water and iced tea. Occasionally I'll drink some kind of, there's this stuff called Pact. I don't know if you ever heard of that or not. I'll have one of those every now and then if I just want some flavor. But
okay.
One thing, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to get back to the shoulder and talk about, you could probably try to go to an orthopedist or somebody who might be able to tell you exactly what's damaged. The problem is, once they identify it, all they're going to do is either prescribe some sort of anti-inflammatory or some sort of pain management, or, you know, if it got worse, they would recommend surgery. And
right.
In reality, we don't need to know what's wrong. I don't need to know what joint or what part of the joint is injured. We can fix it without knowing. That's what our body does when we feed it right. So we go back to, and I've been saying this a lot, all pain is inflammation. All pain is inflammation.
Yep.
Inflammation is a good thing. When we injure our shoulder, and somewhere along the line, you've injured something in your shoulder. And it could have been a repetitive thing. It could have been a one-time thing. I had horrible shoulders. My shoulder pain was horrendous. Most of it was because of wrestling. Wrestling's really hard on your shoulders. And mine is gone completely. I had it for years, decades. Mine's gone completely. Here's the thing. When we injure part of our body, the omega-6 fats that we get are inflammatory fats. But that's actually a good thing. Because when we get an injury, we want inflammation right at the site of the injury. That's how our body fixes it. Once that happens, then we need the omega-3 fats, which are anti-inflammatory, to go in there and take the inflammation away. So it's kind of like we sent in the crew with the tools, and they're in there working, and they get it fixed. But we never tell them to leave, so they keep hammering and sawing, and we never get rid of the pain because we are chronically inflamed because of our diet is so high in omega-6 and so low in omega-3 that we injure something, it inflames, and we never get rid of the inflammation. Years and years and years and decades go by. We still have inflammation. So the whole key here is I don't care what part of your shoulder's wrong. We don't need to know. If you get your fatty acid in balance, and assuming we have good digestion, the pain will go away. So a ketogenic diet goes a long way towards anti-inflammatory, because on a ketogenic diet, you can't really eat processed food. Processed food is where we're getting all of our omega-6s from. Now, if you go farther and you're eating grass-fed animals are very high in omega-3. Grain-fed animals are very high in omega-6. So, and it, then if we go further and we eat good seafood, salmon, sardines, tuna, those are really high in omega-3s. Walnuts are good for omega-3s. So you need to start seeking out foods high in omega-3 and avoiding foods high in omega-6. And remember, all factory farmed animals end up being high in omega-6. I know when you're on the road, those are difficult to avoid. So you really have to work hard to get as many omega-3s as you can. And if you get that right and get your digestion right, your pain will go away.
Hmm. What about our krill oil pills? Is that a okay thing to take?
You know, I would take them now. There's no real harm in it. There's not a tremendous amount of proof that we're actually getting the omega-3s from that we should. But it would be better than not doing anything. This one of those supplements, there's no real downside to it. And it certainly could help. So, yeah, try some krill oil every day. Sardines are excellent. Salmon is fantastic. Okay. Grass-fed beef is great. Grass-fed butter is good.
If you get that right,
the pain will go away.
All right. We've been trying to do, like, we just ordered a half of beef from a guy that I'm pretty sure he said it was grass-fed. I guess I didn't verify exactly how he fed it out, but hopefully it will end up being. And then, you know, I usually bring, like, some chicken thighs and hamburgers, and I microwave them on the road and stuff. So I'm only gone, you know, I'm home most weekends. And so I'm able to at least get some food, you know, bring some food with me. And then but one thing I did notice, I went from about 165 pounds to I'm down to 150. And my wife says I'm too thin now. I don't know. Is there a point where a person is, you lose too much weight?
There's the music. This is a really good question. So I'm going to come back to you right after the break, and we'll talk about this. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim Cockerham is with me today. This is Destination Health. Before the break, we were talking with Nick in Illinois. We're going to go right back there. So here's the thing, Nick. There's a lot of disagreement about this. Some people say you should be as lean as possible. That's the healthiest thing to be. There is quite a bit of evidence, though, that being too lean could actually take some time off of your life. That people who carry a little bit more weight than that tend to live longer. We could argue that kind of data back and forth all day long. I tend to go by what your body tells you. How do you feel when you're that weight?
I guess I don't feel bad. I would like to. I do flatbed, so you know I sweat in the steel mills and stuff quite a bit. I try to drink as much water as I can and that kind of thing, but I like I say, I guess I don't feel bad, and overall, I guess I feel okay. I was a little possibly kind of going back to the shoulder thing, a little wondering it, you know, being so lean that maybe I would be damaging my muscles or something like that. I don't know.
No, it comes back to the fatty acid balance. Get that right, the pain will go away. Now, if you'd like to gain some of that weight back, and I did, I went down to 140, and I actually felt like that was just too low for me. And I've stabilized at about 155, and the way I did it was I just increased my good carbs. So I would eat some more berries. I would eat some berries with some whipped cream. I would make some raw milk yogurt, which could be kind of high in carbs. And I just increased my carbs by about 20 or 30 grams a day from what I was doing, and I just made sure they were all real healthy carbs, the raw honey at night, making some really dark chocolate and sweetening it with a little bit of raw honey. So I was able to actually give myself some treats that were kind of nice, and I have found that I can tell you what I'm going to weigh based on how many carbs I take in. If I go back down to 20 or 30 a day, I'll go back down to 140. If I keep it at 50 or 60, I stay right here at about 155. For me, it seems pretty simple. It's not always that easy for everybody, but I would certainly try that. Let's go to Arkansas. Owen, welcome to the program. It's your turn. Yep, it's your turn.
Oh, okay. My son's a real fan of yours. He's an over-the-road trucker. And the more I try and do research on what you're talking about, and so much of it doesn't make any sense on the research. And, you know, some of it does, don't get me wrong, but so much like the grain bit. I mean, humans have been doing grain for close to a million years.
Stop. Let me correct you. Humans have been eating grains for 10,000 years, not a million, not even close. 10,000 was the first time we started to cultivate and eat grain. It's been about 10,000 years.
Well, not according to what the research is, and they've found grain in places and archaeological digs that are close to a million years old in clay pots and everything else.
Let's try this then. Let's not argue the number of years. Let's just talk about how many people have gone grain free and found amazing benefits. Now, tell me the downside to not eating grain.
It's good for you. That's all I can say. You know,
what's good for
you?
Hold on. You can't just say it's good for you. Tell me what about grain is good for you.
It gives you fiber. It gives you
Stop there.
It gives you a lot of things.
So what? I can get fiber from vegetables. I can get fiber from coconut. Those are all totally natural foods with lots of nutrients and fiber. Why eat a grain when all you can tell me that's in it is fiber? Big deal. What else is there?
It's not bad for you. It gives you I could never afford buying half the stuff that you recommend. A lot of the stuff tastes terrible.
Wait a minute. Don't get confused with cost and health benefits. Those are two totally different things. Well, I wish I had a whole show with you. Really, I mean, and I don't mean that sarcastically. I mean it in a really good way. Skeptics help me make points better than I can make them on my own. So I love skeptics. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not angry. I'm not arguing about this. It's just a discussion. If I were to recommend a book, would you read a book or listen to a book? And it's by a cardiologist, by the way. By a doctor, he's a cardiologist, very famous cardiologist.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Read the book or listen if you like to listen. It's available on Audible or on audiobooks. Listen to Wheat Belly Total Health. and he will explain why humans should never, ever eat grains. And if that isn't enough, there's another one called Grain Brain, who is written by a brain surgeon. Same thing. Wheat Belly, he talks about all the problems that the proteins in grains cause in humans. And in the other one, he talks about all the problems that it causes in your brain. Your body and your brain are horribly affected by the proteins in grains. There is another issue. I don't think humans should eat grains at all. But the grains that we eat today, the grains we were eating even 50 years ago, they have been genetically modified, they've been hybridized over and over and over, and there is clear evidence that the proteins in grains are absolutely destructive to the human body.
Okay. I find some of that research, and if I did go those books you're talking about, my son gave me the information. I looked them up online, and they're interesting. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to figure out because I think
Let me try one more. Since we're stuck on the grain thing, let me try one more thing, because this is one of the things I always fall back to. When I'm reading stuff and there's conflicting reports and this doctor says that and this scientist says that, I have a kind of a test that I fall back to. Let's say that they took you and I, or just you or me, doesn't matter, and they dropped us off in the wilderness somewhere, anywhere in the world. Pick any spot. I don't care where it is. They dropped us off in the wilderness. What grain are you going to eat?
Probably wild oats if I could find them, because they grow all over the world.
And you could just pick the plant and start chewing on it?
You'd have to mill it, you know, in a bowl or something like that. But, straight out.
Yeah, so it's probably not a real natural food. If it's an animal, I can hunt it down and kill it and eat it. Don't have to do anything to it. If I can pick it off the plant and eat it, that's a natural food. We did not eat grain for many, many, many hundreds of thousands of years. We started eating grain because of a worldwide famine. It was the only thing that kept people alive.
Well, yeah. When they started doing the hybrid grains and everything else, the world would starve to death without them. So, yeah, you were 100% right on that. As for grass-fed, you know, I'm in Arkansas. I lived in Kansas and everything else, and I very rarely see cattle that are not grass-fed.
Okay, you're right. Hold on. And the reason I interrupt you is just so I can get to the point so we don't run out of time. Lots of cattle are still grass-fed. Unfortunately, they end up grain, corn, and antibiotic finished. They send them to the feedlot. They load them up with grain, corn, and antibiotics because it makes them really, really fat, and they get more money for them. And that 30 to 90 days that they're being finished on grain and corn and antibiotics wipes out the nutritional profile from their whole life of eating grass. So beef needs to be grass-fed and grass-finished. It needs to go right from the pasture to the slaughter.
Okay. Well, I know that there's certain areas where they go straight from not even the feedlot, they go straight into sold and sent to the slaughterhouse. I guess that's what you're talking
about. Almost unheard of. In fact, when it happens, it will be labeled grass-fed and grass-finished, and it will be more expensive. You don't find it in conventional beef. They are all grain-finished. They're all loaded with antibiotics because it makes them really fat and profitable. But it wipes out their omega-6 to omega-3 balance. Hey, great stuff. In fact, I want you to call back next week so we can keep talking about this. Thanks for joining me. We're all out of time. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, Kim. Thanks. Great week. Great show.
Looking forward to next week. Have a good week, everyone.
All right. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week.